This episode of the Old Dogs REI Network is brought to you by Mino Studio.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is a show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes, type in Old Dog, spelled D-A-W-G, find our podcast, and subscribe. Well, today we have with us Reed Guzins. Reed moved to the U.S. in 2012 to pursue a career in structural engineering. However, he discovered a passion for real estate investing. With limited funds and no credit, Reed went from purchasing a small duplex to growing his own real estate investing firm, RSN Property Group. Reed now syndicates large multi-million dollar deals across the U.S. Reed Guzins certainly lives up to the never say die, I guess I should say it in an Aussie accent, never say die Aussie attitude when it comes to being a successful entrepreneur. Reed is also the host of an up-and-coming podcast, Investing in the U.S., an Aussie's Guide to U.S. Real Estate, wherein he invites other distinguished real estate investors and entrepreneurs to speak with him about their success and help guide other international investors who want to successfully invest in the U.S. Well, welcome, Reed, and thank you for joining us at the Old Dogs REI Network.
Bill, g'day. How's it going? Thank you so much for having me on your show today. It's a beautiful Friday afternoon, and we're doing podcasts.
You got that right. And I'll tell you, it is, it's unusual. You know, we don't always have old dogs on. You're definitely not an old dog. So you're a young guy and got a lot of time ahead of you here. But it's real interesting that one, you're an international investor, but you reside in the U.S. So I think we're going to get a real neat perspective about real estate investing from you. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. Hopefully I can share some of my experience with your older investors out there who maybe are sitting on the fence, and they say, well, if this young buck can do it, why can't I?
You got that. And I won't throw any real, you know, bad jokes in, like, you know, throw another shrimp on the Barbie or anything like that.
Hey, bring it on. I love it.
You got it. Well, Reed, tell us your story. How did you, structural engineering, real interesting, going from engineering to real estate investing. What was the connection? How did you get involved in real estate?
Yeah, good. Look, Bill, I'm really going to show my young millennial age in during this interview, but please don't hold that against me. I'm a structural engineer. I was a former structural engineer. I spent over 10 years in the industry. I graduated back in 2006, 2007. I got a job immediately working overseas in London on the London 2012 Olympic Games. Obviously, the Olympic Games don't just happen. It takes many, many years to build the infrastructure. So I moved to London. I definitely was wanting to backpack around the world, you know, experience the world. Australians being so far, quote unquote, down under, we're very isolated. And so it's in our DNA to go out and, you know, experience the world. So the first opportunity, once I graduated university, being 21, went straight overseas and I had a job over there. And the financial crisis hit. But luckily, I was, you know, I was insular to that because I was working on the 2012 Olympic Games, and that was a real like feather in my cap. I jumped into a job that was probably, be honest, is outside of my realm or experience. And so I spent 2 years over abroad. I spent a bit of time backpacking around the south of France, and you know, just really enjoying myself. I worked on some super yachts. And essentially, I ended up back in Australia after about 2 years of being away, back at a day job in Australia. And I just thought to myself, you know what? What the hell am I doing? Like, I did not subscribe to sitting in a cubicle, you know, answering to a boss who answered to, you know, a board of directors for the next 50 years of my life. I thought, you know, by gosh, I've got so much more to give. But I just didn't know what that was. I didn't know what entrepreneurialism was. I didn't know what real estate was at the time. And over a period of about a year, I started educating myself, picking up some books on investing my money. And I picked up the little book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that really struck a chord with me. And this is back in 2008, 2009. And that from there was just the catalyst to really put me on this track towards financial freedom, investing in real estate. Now, that's the sort of the lead up story. But at the time, and when I was backpacking, I had actually met or fallen in love with an American girl. And so she came out to Australia for a couple of years. And in 2011, we packed up our stuff and I quit my job and I moved to the United States because she was obviously from here. And we moved to New York City and I didn't have a job. I didn't have anything. I rocked up. And I'd used my sort of days as working on the super yachts in the south of France to just go out, hit the streets, screw, you know, putting my resume online because it's just a deep, dark hole. And I just hit every single engineering firm until I got a job. And until someone said yes, I heard so many no's and I just was relentless. I said, this has to work. And I got a job after about a couple of weeks of looking, and that was in 2011. And within about 2 weeks of being on the ground in New York City, I was at my first real estate investing networking event. And I had been to some in Australia, and I thought, by gosh, I thought Australia had some great real estate networking events, but New York was on steroids. And I had to learn like really quickly to either sink or swim, like understand the US investing economy. It was 2011, 2012. So there was a lot of cheap houses. And within probably about 6 months to a year, I had purchased my first cash flowing property. And that was the duplex in upstate New York. I had no credit. I had to buy it all cash. And from there, I bought a bunch more. And quickly I found that I ran out of my own money and I had to, but I love this multifamily space and I wanted to get more involved in it. And so in 2013, I hired a coach. And I started, you know, getting involved in syndication, and I did my first major syndication in 2015. I did a couple last year, and 2017 has got a huge year ahead of me to try and close on about 600 doors if we can make it happen. So that's kind of in a nutshell my story without going on too long.
Gosh, that's a very exciting, from a duplex to 600 units in process. I mean, that's very exciting. The first larger properties that you purchased in syndication, do you still have those properties currently?
Yeah, I'm invested with a bunch of other people. You know, I was riding on the coattails of my mentor to get involved in those deals. This year is all about focused on trying to step out of the shadows and be my own, you know, quote unquote, lead sponsor or of a deal. And that's what I'm actively working on and employing, you know, interns and analysts to help me grow the business and all that sort of good stuff. So, yeah, that's to answer your question. Yes, I'm still obviously involved in those deals and enjoying some really great cash flow from them right now.
Oh, that's excellent. So how many, I know you're working on 600. How many do you currently have?
Yeah, I have collectively with some other investors over 600 units. I think 610. And that was two deals last year. The deal in 2015 was a 250 unit deal, but I didn't take an equity stake in it. But I definitely took a nice finder's fee. So by connecting the right dots, and it was a really incredible experience. And I'm still learning so much. Being involved in real estate investing since purchasing my first property back in middle of 2012 to now, Only been investing for 5 years, but, you know, been educating myself for the better part of a decade since 2008, 2009, when I first picked up that book, Rich Dad Poor Dad. So and combined with the fact that being a structural engineer, I was actually in my day job, my former day job, I was surrounded by, you know, construction and a lot of developers. And, you know, I actually was very lucky to be exposed to the construction side of it and the design side of it. So even though it wasn't the investing and financing side, it was still a very valuable asset to have when you go in and talk to a general contractor, or, you know, you're talking about structural issues. You know, I can walk a property and pretty much do my own structural engineering inspection. So if I'm not certified, but I can definitely see if there's any major issues with a property. So yeah.
Oh, that's great. Now you started off sort of working with your mentor in that position. Probably, I would imagine, not a principal role, but you had the first one, you said you got a finder's fee, so you probably weren't part of the team in that first deal, or
right.
Then after that you got involved and
exactly yeah, it was just sort of more of a snowball effect. It was like, look, you know, I made the right connections to the deal and in terms of capital and the person who had that deal. So don't get me wrong, I did very, very well from that particular deal, but it wasn't an equity stake. And obviously, to build long-term wealth, you want to have equity in deals, in syndication deals. And the second deal was in early 2016. And that was, I raised a bunch of capital for that, took an equity stake in the general partnership side, and did the same thing on a secondary deal later in the year. So it's all about, you know, right now developing, you know, raising capital, and you know as I said, I've got a podcast to educate other international people about investing here in the United States, building a brand, all that sort of good stuff that, you know, being an engineer, I had no idea this is what you had to do to raise money. But it is a really exciting journey, and I'm just really enjoying it right now.
Oh, that's great. Now are you bringing in your own investors? Do they mix with the investors of the other folks involved with the deal, or how does that work when you're obviously recruiting investors for these deals? I mean, do they become your investors? Do they become the deal's investors? How does that work? You know, and sort of a technical base.
No, I like to keep it separate. You know, the way I view it is that with a large deal, you obviously, there's more capital that needs to be raised. So say it's a $6 million deal and you need to raise $2 million. Well, I may go out and say, okay, hey, Bill, you can you raise 700 or 800,000? And, you know, I'll raise $1 million and someone else might raise some money. And really what that does is you are representing, the reason that you take a portion of the general partnership side is because you're representing your investors. And so I always like to go into deals just to say, you know, to the person who I'm maybe partnering with or joint venturing with, you know, look, I want to be part of the general partnership or part of the decision-making team because I'm representing my interest of my investors. So I do like to keep it separate because, you know, their money is more valuable than my money. I want to keep it very, very safe. And so any decision that is made, I'm involved in that decision, you know, whether it be on terms of repositioning or when you sell the property or when you refinance. And I'm privy to those conversations. So I can then say, well, it's in my investors' best interest if we maybe don't refi right now, or I can give my 2 cents at that particular time.
Now, is it a collective communication with the investors on a deal, or do you have you communicate separately with your investors?
Yeah, I typically communicate separately just to keep it, because they're investing in me, Reed Goossens. The deal is obviously when you start, for all those people out there who may be interested in raising capital or have raised capital, they probably know that the deal is important. And don't get me wrong, deal and team is important, but they're investing in me, Reed Goossens. They trust me. I've built rapport with them. I've spent a lot of time educating them on multifamily. They've listened to my podcast. They might have come to one of my meetup events or conferences or webinars that I've done. And so there's been that, you know, these touches over a period of time, and they will then, you know, trust me. And so they will look to me to be their sort of communication link to the deal. So, okay, this month, you know, XYZ happened. We put in some more carports, or we renovated 3 more units or 10 more units or whatever it might be. And I try and keep them up to speed with what's going on in the deal. And after a period of time, they just, you know, I at the beginning of any deal, they ask questions. And then once they start seeing returns come in, they're, you know, they're pretty happy, like pig in mud.
That's great. Now, do you have a lot of out-of-country investors in your team?
I've got a few. Mm-hmm. I've got a handful of Australian investors. I had a large majority of my investors are American, because I'm here. You get to touch and feel, you know, the deals and each other, because you're sort of meeting for coffee, meeting for lunch, meeting for dinner, getting to know investors. Through my podcast, I'm getting more and more international investors, just because that's the way I'm marketing myself. And definitely this year, there's a few groups out of Israel that will be wanting to partner with me, which is really exciting. So a few groups out of Singapore and Hong Kong. So I'm really, really looking forward to growing the business in that sense.
It's exciting. Well, in the time that you've done this, have you encountered some difficulties? I like to kind of look at that. Let's say your biggest mistake to date that you've done, that hopefully it'll be something our listeners can benefit from.
I think I didn't just jump straight into multifamily. I sort of skipped over a few of the steps, but I flipped a few houses before, back in 2013. And in Philadelphia, when I was still living in New York, I now live in LA. And I had some issues there. What happened was one of the mistakes was hiring the wrong contractor and not doing my proper due diligence on the contractor, and having expectations and not clearly outlining my expectations at the start of the job. That was probably one of the biggest mistakes, because there was a lot of headbutting in terms of, you know, I wanted things done a certain way. I've been, you know, as a professional, you know, structural engineer, I would, you know, on these big, huge multi-million-dollar jobs, there was schedules written, there was weekly meetings and updates from the general contractor. And I just wasn't getting any of that from my residential contractor. And at the end of the day, I had enough, and I ended up having to fire him. There was a couple of things stolen from site. You know, we won't get into it, but there was just a whole bunch of issues that we ended up losing money on the flip. So it was something that I look back on and say, okay, well, if you have a way of doing business and you like to do business that way, and it works, because, you know, I'd been involved in structural engineering for so long, and that's how I know the commercial industry works, then stick to your guns. Like, if someone can't sign a contract, or if someone doesn't want to submit a schedule, then, you know, they may be cheaper than the other general contractor, but I'm going to go with that general contractor who's going to be able to submit me a schedule, sign contracts, and be held accountable to their work, because that can really come back to bite you in the butt if you're not careful.
Were they doing major construction or just a light rehab?
No, it was pretty major. We had it was a row house, and we put on it was an existing two-story row house, and we actually put on a third story with a rooftop deck. Mm. So it wasn't by any means, you know, someone in who just could come along and knows how to tile and paint walls and you know, do some stucco. It was serious, you know, structural, you know, engineering that was going on. And actually, I did all the engineering drawings for it, so I knew it inside out. So when they weren't doing the right thing, I could kick him in the butt, and they didn't like that. Right. Okay. So it's when they've been used to having, you know, clients that don't understand the construction process and they can pull the wool over their eyes, it might be easier. But for someone, when I knew what I was talking about, then, and knew what things cost and how it worked, and, you know, by code, what things had to be done by, it was just a lot of corners were cut. And it was really down to the fact that I chose the wrong contractor, didn't spend enough time doing enough due diligence. So definitely moving forward, you know, implementing some strategies in the current business, you know, obviously buying large multifamily is different to adding, you know, a third story to a house. But it's, you know, it's still same sort of principles. You want guys to be committing to schedules. You want guys to be, you know, signing contracts, liquidated damages. If they don't perform on time and the job takes longer than what they said, you know, there's going to be penalties. But on the flip side, if they do, you know, do a really good job and they complete it within time, then there's bonuses for them. So, you know, there's two sides to every coin, and that might sound harsh to some people, but it's just the way business is done, and I like to operate like that. It reduces my risk.
Sure. Now, where are you based out of?
I'm based out of Los Angeles, California, and here in Culver City. We moved here a couple of years ago. My fiance is from LA, so yeah, we moved out of the cold from New York.
And where are you investing?
Yeah, investing. In Texas, predominantly. Obviously, I invested in Philadelphia. I have invested in Philadelphia. I've also got some properties in upstate New York, which is where I cut my teeth back when I first moved here. But I'm also looking at other markets. I'm looking at Phoenix, Arizona. I'm looking at El Paso, Texas. Looking at actually Kansas City, Missouri. I just put an offer in on a property in Kansas City, Missouri, 156 units. So see how that will pan out over the next week or so. Really, really just looking to underwrite a lot of deals and in different markets because, as you know, or maybe you don't, is that, you know, multifamily is really hot right now and trying to find a deal that pencils out is becoming harder and harder.
Oh, yeah. What other parts of Texas are you in?
Dallas, Fort Worth, and I'm looking in Houston, and I'm also looking in San Antonio. Gotcha. So
those are great areas. Yeah,
great areas. So, yeah.
Looking at that, you know, I'd mentioned just sort of your biggest mistake. What would you say is your biggest success today?
I'm one of those people that I want things to happen today, but it actually takes time. And looking back, I think I've achieved some good stuff. I haven't arrived by any means. I've got so much more to learn and continue to grow as an investor. But I really appreciated what I've built to date. It's and again, I must harp on that. I've just created a small little business. It's nothing crazy, but I can see that it's starting to reap rewards and that's kind of, you know, satisfying in a way. And it's a slow journey. And one of the biggest things I've had to learn is that it's not going to happen overnight and it's a marathon and not a sprint. And, being the person that I am and the young buck, I want things to happen, you know, within, you know, snap of my fingers, but it may not, I had to learn to take, to understand that it's a process and it takes time.
Right, sure. Well, you know, one of the things that just comes to mind here is I see you're based in Los Angeles and you're investing in multiple different states. And I would say that, you know, getting your boots on the ground and a good team in place has got to be a major priority for you. And I just want to kind of pick your mind in that regard is, you know, how do you put together a strong team that you know you can depend upon that will help you to achieve the goals that you've set out to achieve going into this?
Yeah, it's a really, really good question. Part of the reason I started the podcast was, and it started syndication in general, was back in 2010, 2011, when a lot of people, whether the Australian dollar was very, very strong against the greenback. A lot of turnkey properties were being sold. Turnkey properties are obviously still being sold today. But there was a lot of people getting burnt from having to manage, you know, trying to set up these teams from half across the world and these turnkey properties that were telling them that they would do all this stuff. And I said, you know, I saw this sort of need of wanting to do this, people wanting a good investment, but they didn't want to have to manage these things from halfway across the world. So I had to get really good at setting up teams on the ground. I always like to have a partner in each and every city that I invest, someone who's, you know, either invested in the deal and is a general partner, or someone who is, you know, boots on the ground and is a property manager and they're part of the deal as well. Because with any deal investing out of state is that you want to be able to trust the people that you work with. In terms of building that trust, it takes time. So that's why the markets that I just mentioned to you in each and every one of those markets, it's taken me a long time to build up trust with people, but I have finally got to a point where I can say, you know, I can identify people in each of those markets and I can call them up and say, hey, I'm looking at this deal on XYZ Street. Do you mind if you swing by it and have a look? You know, let me know your thoughts. If we're interested, maybe you want to put in an offer together. And that person has then become part of my team because I built trust with them over a period of time. And then that trust then, you know, correlates to a good operating property, or it might be, you know, I might be able to leverage that person that they say, well, look, I'm not interested in this particular deal, but you definitely need to be working with, you know, this person or this property manager or this general contractor. And because I trust them, I then trust the people that they refer me to. And obviously I've got to do my due diligence on those people, but it sort of helps me not then reinvent the wheel and start from scratch. So in each and every one of those markets I mentioned before, I have a group of people that have built relationships over years since I've been in the United States.
Yeah. So tell me about that. For example, you know, you mentioned Kansas City or El Paso, some of these other ones that are new markets for you. Who's the first, you know, contact person you make in those areas?
Well, it's funny that in each and every one of those markets. I actually know an Australian.
Oh no!
So I've created this group called the Australian Real Estate Mafia Group, and it's just coined this term. And we have a monthly call, and it started off as just being a check-in with all these people who have real estate businesses in the United States, and it's just a way we can check in and get to know one another. And it started off about 6 or 7 months ago. We met in person in San Diego last summer, and we plan to meet, you know, once a year. And everyone in that group is either from one of those markets I mentioned. So that there, I did it. I solely did that, not because because I wanted to meet more people and other Aussies and connect with guys who are, you know, giving it a crack over here in the United States, but because they are boots on the ground in those markets, and I can leverage those people, and they become friends and they become, you know, colleagues of mine and mentors and investors. And that has helped me then leverage so much more by having my network. That is because these people are on the ground and they can refer me to the right types of contractors and brokers and people like that.
Oh, that's great. And that, are they critical in terms of selecting the
very critical
the other team members, right?
Very, very critical. But through the last 6 or 7 months, in each one of those markets, I have been, you know, actively, you know, I'd be saying to one of my mates in Kansas City, I say, hey, Nate is one of my mates out there. And I said, who would you recommend I talk to about, you know, getting legal stuff set up? And he will refer me to someone, and I'll check them out on Yelp or check out any of the reviews. And I might, you know, vet them on BiggerPockets or something. And if they can, you know, meet the mustard, then I will give them a call and have a chat, and we build a relationship. Nothing ever happens overnight. You know, no one just doesn't start doing business with someone, you know, at the drop of a hat. It takes time. And that was probably one of the biggest lessons I've learned since moving to the United States and starting a business is, with relationships, it's very, very important, and businesses are developed on relationships. So that, and they take time to develop. They don't just happen overnight. So they can happen a little quicker if they're being referred to by someone that I trust, but I still have to do my own due diligence. But it definitely quickens up the process rather than me going into a market completely cold and trying to cold call people and say, hey, I'm Reed from Los Angeles. You want to do business?
Right, right. No, that's a great idea. Now, how did you initially contact these guys? Did you know them, I mean, when you're in Australia, or did you do that after you were here?
So it actually came through the podcast. So starting the podcast and then interviewing other Aussies, being part of forums online, you know, expats here in the United States, and I'd post something, you know, oh, I'm interested in real estate. Is anyone else? And over a period of, you know, 12 to 18 months, I had a buddy of mine in New York who is an Australian who's into real estate investing. He introduced me to a handful of people. It just sort of kept spreading and spreading. And all of a sudden we had this group of like 12 or 13 people. And it's funny, once you even those 12 or 13 people know my American, you know, mentors and friends. And so it's actually quite a small world once you get going, and scratching the surface, because people who are good at in their industry of syndication or multifamily, you quickly find out who are the best people to work with pretty quickly in whatever market you're investing in.
That's a great idea. Now, a lot of our listeners, as I mentioned earlier, you know, and knowing the show, you know, there are 50 plusers that some of them are approaching retirement, some are already in retirement, and they are looking for ways to either be better prepared for retirement, to bring in additional cash flow. You know, maybe they're retired and they're bored and they're looking for something to do that'll, you know, get them thinking and get them involved by investing in property themselves. And what kind of advice would you have to these folks that obviously, you know, one thing we have in common is that, you know, we don't have a long time frame necessarily, not to say that we're going to pass off tomorrow or anything, but we, you know, we are, you know, we're looking for a, you know, quick return, and cash flow is key here. And what advice would you give to those folks that are looking to get involved in real estate investing?
Yeah, I think you have to ask yourself two questions, and given age, is capital preservation is one side of the coin, and cash flow is another side, and then high returns is another one. So more like a triangle, not a coin. But the thing is, in real estate, you can get good capital preservation and you can get cash flow. You can also get high returns, but it may be higher risk. And so in terms of what people want, you have to ask, okay, I want cash flow and I want probably capital preservation. So what sort of deals does that lead me down the path of? And they're typically your sort of more existing assets that are going to be, you know, cash flowing from day one, like a multifamily or a storage unit, or even single families, you can get some really good cash flow. But in terms of advice, I think the biggest thing is understand what you want to invest in, or what you want your money to be doing for you in terms of how it works. The second step is then to go out and educate yourself on that particular space. Maybe it might be, I want to get investing in cash flow in mobile home parks. Well, okay, we'll go out and start understanding what a mobile home park is and how you start investing in it. Now, you may not go and do the investing or find the deals, but you may find someone who is a syndicator who can help you, you know, place your capital. And you again, it goes back to that trust and transparency. And, you know, over a period of time through the education, you can be more and more inclined to understand what they do. You can build that trust, and then you become to a point where you are happy enough to invest with them, or go out and invest on your own if you think you have the ability to do that. So, yeah, the biggest things for me is capital preservation, you know, cash flow and education. And then through those three things, I think you're going to start developing a network of people who can start referring you towards the types of investments that you want to be looking for and looking at, if that makes sense.
No, that's great. That's great. It seems like you've really accelerated, especially within the last couple of years. And where do you see your business going, and where would you, what's sort of your end game in this whole real estate investing thing?
My end game, there's not really an end game. It's more the fact that I'm just enjoying the journey. I've got goals. I want to have, you know, as I said, this year I want to close on another 600 units. I might not reach 600, but if I reach 400 or reach 300, I just want to reach and continually be adding investments to my portfolio. I obviously want to be creating long-term wealth for my family. And having, you know, a good bunch of freedom with my time, because that's kind of why I got involved in this and working for myself and being able to, you know, fly back to Australia to visit my family back in Australia when I want, and not have to be tied to something back here in terms of a day job or whatnot. So in terms of the business, I'm wanting to continue to grow and my investors' capital. I want to continue to grow and find and identify really great deals that are attractive to my investors. In terms of my mission statement is that I want to continue to grow my investors' capital through looking at low risk investments. And then in terms of the personal side, I really want to have a brand and a legacy that I can be proud of and look back and say that, you know, I did everything in my power. You know, I did it well. I did it with dignity. I did it with, you know, with all those with trust and transparency. And people can look at me and say, I really enjoyed working with Reed because he's a stand up guy and he says it how it is. And you know that you don't get any sort of fakeness with me. I'll tell it how it is. And if it's not a good deal, I won't invest. And if it's a load of BS, I'll also tell you that as well. So in general, I'm looking to try and create a bit of a legacy for myself and be known as the guy that just tells it how it is.
I like that. I like the fact that, you know, character and integrity is an important part of what you're trying to build. And that's in my eyes, that's key. Above all else, you know, that's great. Well, we are getting near the end of our time here, unfortunately, and I already know I've got to have you back. I think we might even do a whole thing on syndication. You made me think, you know, but you've provided some great, great information for our listeners. We have a little session at the back end of all of our shows called the Wrap It Up. In our wrap up, we ask you a series of quick questions, and you give us your best answers. And hopefully you provide some great little nuggets that people can hold on to and pursue further. So are you ready for our Wrap It Up session?
Let's do it.
All right. Favorite real estate book?
Rich Dad Poor Dad.
Excellent. Same here. Favorite business book?
Oh, favorite business book. I'm reading Grant Cardone's 10X rule right now. I'm really enjoying that.
Hey, you know, I had that on my list. Are you liking it so far?
I am liking it. If you take sort of bits out of it and, you know, take certain takeaway key pieces of advice and apply it to your business, then that's very, very key. And I think that's the thing with any business book, is if you can take that some pieces of advice and combine it with other pieces of advice and you know things that are important to you, and go off and apply it in your business. So that's what I like to try and aim to do with when I read every book.
I love it. How about most valuable website outside of your own for success?
It probably I'd have to go to BiggerPockets. I don't use it as much anymore just because of the space that I'm in. Mm-hmm. But for definitely people who are starting out, it's a great, I always tell people, even if they don't invest with me, but they invest in another state and they're international, I say jump on BiggerPockets. And any you know team member or personnel on your team that you're trying to build out, vet them via that. Like ask the question, is Joe Blow a good bloke, you know, and someone, you know, you'll either get the yes or no pretty quickly. So I've had it very handy when I'm vetting people, particularly contractors and property managers in a new market that I might be testing.
Great. How about favorite app?
I was using for a period of time the app that is to do with Calendly. I can't even pronounce it right, but essentially it's a reminder that I can, you know, tell Siri to remind me to call so and so on Monday, and then it will hit me up. It'll put it in my calendar, and it will then remind me again. It's Calendly, Calendly, I call it, and I really, really enjoy that app. So if anyone's out there, it's Calendly.
Okay, that's great. Great, haven't heard of that one, but that sounds great to explore. How about a favorite quote?
I'll have to go to my dad. He always told me, a fool and their money are easily parted. So what he means by that is that, you know, you can, if you, and what I took away from it anyway is education. You know, educate yourself in whatever you do. If you're going to invest in something, don't go into it any, go in there with eyes wide open, understand what you're getting yourself into, understand the fees, understand the risks, understand, you know, how people are getting paid. Ask all the questions before you start investing, because if you're not knowledgeable, you're going to get the wool pulled over your eyes, and something, you know, people are out there are looking to, you know, let's face it, people are out there to make a quick buck, and if you're not careful, that you can be some of their prey. So I always just say, a fool and their money are easily parted. Be educated, surround yourself with the right people, people that you trust, and you do just fine.
Final question. If you, something happened horrible and you lost everything, except you had $1,000 in the bank, what would you do with that $1,000 to sort of relaunch your real estate investing business?
Yeah, that's a good question, isn't it? What would I do? Oh, that would be tough. Oh, that's a very, very good question. I think if I had $1,000 left over after losing everything and trying to rebuild myself as an investor, I think I would have to go and, if I've lost that much money, I think I'd have to go and maybe hire someone new as a coach. I clearly would have hit rock bottom, maybe because I thought I knew too much. So it would try to be and go and get advice from someone new and reputable that I've clearly gone wrong somewhere along the path, and try to get back on that path. So try and maybe employ someone to, whether it be a mentor or a business coach or a life coach, whatever it might be. It would be definitely someone to help me support in that way.
Sure. Is there a good way for people to get a hold of you? How can they reach you if they have questions or if they want to find out more about what you do?
Sure. You can hit me up at Reed, that's R-E-E-D, at rsnpropertygroup.com. You can also go to my website at www.rsnpropertygroup.com. And if you are interested in, you know, listening to an Australian accent for 45 minutes, I do have a podcast, Investing in the US and Aussie's Guide to US Real Estate. So yeah, any one of those ways, I always try and email back people within 24 hours. And I'm always keen to meet up for a coffee or lunch, or if you're in the LA area, don't be afraid. Don't be a stranger. Hit me up and let's do it.
Oh, that's great. Well, as a tradition here, you know, we're called the Old Dogs REI Network. And as part of that tradition that we have, this great deep tradition lasts a whole year long, as long as our podcast. We ask all of our guests, okay, nobody gets out of this one, to give us their best old hound dog howl. Now, I don't know, in Australia, they may not have hound dogs. I don't know. What do they have out there that might?
Dingoes.
Yeah, dingoes. There you go. Okay.
Dingo so, got your baby.
Okay. So maybe you can give us your best old dingo howl. Are you ready for this one?
Yep, let's do it.
All right.
Let's go. Oh! All
right.
Love it.
Well, great. That was an education for me. You know, I didn't know what dingoes sounded like, but now I do.
It probably sounds like any dog, right, when they start howling at the moon.
You got that. Well, thank you so much, Reed. It's been a pleasure to have you on, and just thank you for taking the time out to join us here today.
My pleasure. I really had a lot of fun on this show, and I think you're doing a great job, so keep it up.
Well, thanks. And I just want to thank all those in our listening audience, too, for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing out there right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot, and we greatly appreciate it. Please note, old dog listeners, everything presented here today, and including the links, can be accessed in our detailed show notes that are on the Old Dog website at Old Dog, spelled DAWGS, reinetwork.com/blog, and you'll find all the show notes in there, and links, and the contact information for Reed as well. So if you're driving and you're trying to write things down and you're about ready to crash, don't do that. Just go to the website and you'll be able to get all the information that we discussed today. Well, that is the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king, and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward, and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show. We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.